And joining us from his office in Ann Arbor is Dr. Anthony King. Dr. King is an assistant research professor of psychiatry at the University of Michigan and has done some studies and some work in collaboration with the mental health service staff, psychologists and psychiatrists at the VA, Veterans Administration of Ann Arbor. Dr. King, thanks so much for taking time to be with us on this Friday evening.
Well, thank you very much. It's my pleasure.
It was very interesting to us when we heard about the work that you've been doing, and without trying to interject my own personal story in it, very interesting to me because I am a veteran as well. You've been doing some work, I don't know if I want to call it unusual, but perhaps from a different perspective, with veterans who are returning with post-traumatic stress disorder in the area of mindfulness therapy. Now, the first thing, I guess, you know, the letters PTSD have been bantered around for a long time now. Can you give us a short working definition of post-traumatic stress disorder?
Sure, thanks. So post-traumatic stress disorder was first sort of described as a particular psychiatric entity or problem, not until the 1980s, which a lot of people don't realize, even though, of course, the syndrome has existed for, you know, as long as people have had wars or people have been exposed to trauma. Certainly, descriptions are found in Homer and the Iliad and Shakespeare. It's had a number of different names throughout the centuries. Post-traumatic stress disorder, though, is recognized as having is something that often happens to people, or certainly can happen to people, exposed to trauma. By trauma, I mean a threat to life or physical integrity. And it's normal for people to have these symptoms in the first month or two following trauma, whether that trauma is an automobile collision, an assault, or sexual assault, or combat. The types of symptoms that people experience are things that we also think that might be evolutionarily advantageous, to sort of keep focusing on the fact that there is danger, to sleep lightly. So the types of symptoms that are experienced sort of fall into three clusters or categories, one of which is called intrusive, sort of remembering, keep having intrusive or distressing memories about what happened, to get upset when things remind you of a trauma, what we call triggers or cues in the environment. There's also what's called avoidance symptoms, meaning that people don't want to go anywhere near anything that reminds them of mm-hmm. their trauma. Mm-hmm. Also tend to have symptoms like depression, kind of not things technically called anhedonia, or not getting pleasure out of things that used to give them pleasure. And then finally is the more sort of classic things that people think of, which we call hyperarousal, which can include sleep disturbance, sometimes very profound sleep disturbance, people sleeping 2 or 3 hours a night, an exaggerated startle, and also importantly irritability and anger. People sort of have a hair trigger. So when you have a nut, so as I said, these are the sort of the core symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. These are normal and normative to have shortly following a trauma. When they persist after 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, sometimes decades, that's when we give it the label post-traumatic stress disorder.
How did you come in with what you're involved with at the University of Michigan? You are with the Trauma, Stress, and Anxiety Research Group. How did you form this collaboration with the Veterans Administration there in Ann Arbor to do the work with mindfulness therapy?
Yeah, thanks. So as you mentioned, I came to the University of Michigan actually about almost 10 years ago now, first as a postdoctoral researcher and then later as a faculty member, working on trying to understand the neurobiology of post-traumatic stress disorder, or what happens, you know, to basically what happens to good people when bad things happen.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to them? How can we understand how people adapt and how their brain changes and how these changes in the brain are related to changes in a person's mood and their whole phenomenology of what they like or don't like, and the peripheral nervous system. So I was really engaged at a very basic level, doing what's called translational research involving stress hormones and neuroimaging, fMRI and PET neuroimaging. I was working with both Vietnam veterans and returning veterans returning from OEF or Afghanistan or OEF Iraq in these imaging studies, and so I got to know a lot of the members of the mental health service at the VA in Arbor, where I work as an affiliate, as a research affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
I myself have been interested in mindfulness meditation for a long time. I have gotten both some personal training and then training into using aspects of things that are similar to meditation. I tend to use the word mindfulness practice or mindfulness training rather than meditation, which maybe carries a little bit more baggage.
And what do, I'm sorry to interrupt, but
yeah.
Since we did a working definition of the PTSD, how about a short working definition for mindfulness?
Hey, very good. So there's a number of them out there. Mindfulness is a very old concept, and it is, I think a lot of the people working with mindfulness kind of have come to that through sort of the ancient literature on meditation, and in particular Buddhist meditation. But I argue that mindfulness is a basic psychological principle. It's a very humanistic type of psychological principle. It's really found in a number of different spiritual traditions, as well as now in psychological therapies. John Kabat-Zinn, who's mm-hmm. popularized a lot of the work on mindfulness, particularly application to clinical problems like chronic pain, like stress, uses a nice formula, which is called the mindfulness is basically deciding that you want to focus your mind on something, so on purpose. Very often it's the breath. And you do it in a particular way in that you try to maintain a non-judgmental attitude, looking at things as though for the first time, really looking at them, observing them, and try to maintain this in the present moment a non-judgmental attitude.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I want to talk about the work that you're doing, but are there particular symptoms of the post-traumatic stress disorder, some of the ones that perhaps that you mentioned, that you're trying to focus the mindfulness therapy on?
Sure. Well, we came to this, again, actually, I guess to extend the pun, very open-minded, because we didn't really know. However, we did know a few things. We know that things like mindfulness-based stress reduction, which is, like I said, a program developed by Dr. John Kabat-Zinn at Worcester and University of Massachusetts. But this is really widely applied now, and it appears to be pretty effective mm-hmm. for helping people cope with stress and anxiety, as well as chronic pain. People report, and actually scientific studies have shown moderate and sometimes large effect sizes in terms of improving people's lives. People tend to really like it, although it is a bit of work. So if we think about stress, well, post-traumatic stress disorder, stress is its middle name, right?
Right.
So we know that having PTSD is stressful. And so we rationalize, well, maybe if veterans of PTSD like this kind of work, this might be a way to engage them. And we really didn't know exactly what of the three different clusters, or sometimes counted as four clusters, of numbing, what the biggest effect would be. We did know that published studies have shown decreases in anxiety and depression. There's also a series of really fantastic studies done by Zindel Siegel at the University of Toronto, who developed something fairly similar to MBSR, which is called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. It uses a lot of the techniques and methodologies of mindfulness-based stress reduction, but for people with chronic depression.
Uh-huh.
And he actually has found, and this is published in what's called the American Journal, the Archives of General Psychiatry, kind of the top-tier journal in psychiatry, finds that if you do a single 8-week mindfulness meditation class, this is as effective for preventing relapse of depression than if you're on medication for 2 years.
Huh. Interesting.
So this was another thing that really caught my eye, thinking that, but the big question is, will this type of work be acceptable for veterans with PTSD?
Sure.
PTSD is not, it can be quite profound, and
yeah.
it can be quite distressing, and it has a pretty big symptom load. So the big question is, would find it okay?
And I want to pursue that. We're visiting with Dr. Anthony King, who is with the University of Michigan. He is an assistant research professor of psychiatry at the university. We're talking about some work that he's been involved with the Ann Arbor Veterans Administration on mindfulness therapy for symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Was this therapy that you did in groups, Dr. King?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And how
did that play out? I mean, how if you can give us kind of an idea of how you went about that with a group of veterans?
Absolutely. So, and the group aspect, I think, is very important to the work that's been done. A lot of the work in mindfulness-based therapy has been done in groups. And we started actually with, and our first pilot studies, we actually started them 4 or 5 years ago, working primarily with older veterans who had had chronic PTSD. So these were, actually they were all men, but there were men who served in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Some of them had served in Korea. And they had chronic nightmares and other other symptoms of PTSD for, you know, 30 to 40 years. We offered this to them as part of a research study to say, basically, this is something that we don't know if it'll work. We don't even know if you like it, but would you care to give this a try? And we'll work together and sort of see how acceptable and effective it might be. What I did is I took the manual for what's called mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, and actually Zindel Siegel is a advisor and on the program, and myself, so I've had previous training in mindfulness-based stress reduction. I took a couple of the therapists or the psychologists at the Ann Arbor VA. We got a little bit of funding. Actually went to a training in California and did sort of a residential training in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And what we did is we took, now that model is really designed for people with remitted depression.
Mm-hmm.
So it includes some kind of cognitive therapy for depression. What we did is adapt that in ways that we thought it would be acceptable and useful for older veterans with chronic PTSD.
And how many veterans were in the group?
Usually, well, we try to recruit 6 to 7, and we end up with 5 or 6.
Okay.
So,
visiting with Dr. Anthony King from the University of Michigan. Okay, so you've got around 5, perhaps 6 veterans in the group. My experience with veterans, particularly those perhaps suffering from PTSD, sometimes suffering from a significant depression, is that sometimes there's a feeling of being overwhelmed and that nothing will help. Even though they agreed to the study, was it difficult to get them involved with something, quite frankly, that a lot of people, you said it earlier, might carry feel baggage is attached to something called mindfulness?
Yeah, I hear you. And interestingly, no, it wasn't difficult.
Great.
However, I was concerned about that, and me and the rest of the staff, the people who worked on this project, made effort to be very upfront and to say, you know, this might be a little bit weird. This is sort of unusual. That we're going to do some meditation. We're actually going to do some stuff sort of like yoga and qigong. This might be odd, but you know what? We're going to ask it, would you give us the benefit of the doubt?
Yeah.
Give it a try. What do you think? And the guys did. Now, the very first, so I was going to say that we used sort of the manual for mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which is a lot of the material developed by Dr. John Kabat-Zinn. And the very first day, we do this exercise called Raisin Exercise, which is a way of sort of seeing how much experience there is that we have sort of moment to moment that we very often don't notice because our minds are chugging away. Mm-hmm. We're not really attending to what's going on in our world because there's so much going on in our head. Nothing wrong with that per se, but sometimes we miss out on things that happen. We miss out on the sort of the beauty and the sort of amount of experiences that we have. Also, if what's going on in our head is painful or distressing, that can kind of just cover over everything else. And we all know sort of examples of that where people because they're depressed or because they're obsessed with one thing or another, they kind of don't see how much beauty is available. And that was kind of my attitude with working with veterans with PTSD. This is a real problem, and this is a real disease.
Mm-hmm.
It is it's very painful. But we said, you know what? You're right. You are experiencing a lot of difficulty. Why don't we just try, though, to see what's happening sort of right now? So the Raisin Exercise is it's a little bit hokey or kind of new agey. We invite everybody to take one single raisin and to focus on that raisin and to really notice and smell it, touch it to your lips, and sort of spend about 6 minutes or 10 minutes sort of before finally chewing the raisin. The interesting thing is most people don't realize how much flavor there is in one raisin or how much smell there is, for example. Now, it's interesting because later on, in our last week, I invited the members of the group to kind of give me some feedback. What was it like? What was it like when you first came in here? And a lot of guys said, when you told me when you came out with those raisins,
I'm going to study a raisin for 6 minutes.
I was about to get out of there and tell you you're crazy. But they did it, you know. And they said, you know what, I'm kind of glad I did that. I'm glad that I, you know, gave you the benefit of the doubt, pushed my boundaries a little bit, and did something a little bit unusual.
How long did you work with any one group of veterans?
So this is actually designed as a short intervention. It's 8 weeks.
8 weeks.
And this is the standard. We sort of use standard.
Once a week for 8 weeks, or?
Once a week for 8 weeks. But it includes, actually, in those 8 weeks, we ask, in any MBSR, MBCT group, the idea is you meet together for 2 hours a week, but then you do this at home.
Sure.
And we give sort of CD. Actually, I started with cassette tapes, then I moved to CDs. Now the younger guys don't even use CDs.
I was going to say, do they even know what cassette tapes are?
Yeah, well, it's very funny because some of the older guys didn't know what CDs were.
Yeah.
And now the younger guys also don't know what CDs are because they put everything on their phone.
Sure. So, and how many different groups have you worked with, Dr. King?
In the pilot study with the 8-week intervention, it was 6 groups. And we compared that to sort of groups of veterans doing other short-term sort of standard psychotherapies in the same clinic. I should point out this was a pilot program. It was not randomized. So in terms of research methodology, we need to do some more work and further studies have to be done. But I want to make sure that I plug the study that's going on at the VA Minneapolis, which is a larger study, and they're actually doing very similar program to what we did.
Yeah.
But since then, we also got some support from the federal government, actually from the DOD, to extend this work and to do neurobiological studies, as well as to sort of incorporate mindfulness training or the techniques done in MBSR and MBCT with other forms of PTSD therapy together. And so we actually have 16-week
group, I see.
Which we're running now, and we're in the process of sort of analyzing that data now.
Are you, and maybe you're not, because as you just said, you're analyzing the data. Are you able at this point in time to even venture a guess or make any kind of a definitive statement as to the effect of mindfulness-based therapy as opposed to, I guess, what I would call, or maybe others would call, the standard psychotherapeutic method of treatment of depression or PTSD?
That's a very good, I mean, that's crucial. That is the question. And here's what I can say. Actually, I'm actually very optimistic about psychotherapies for PTSD because actually a special form of therapy called trauma-focused therapies for PTSD, this includes things like EMDR and prolonged exposure, are actually very effective. They're actually more effective than any of the mindfulness groups that we did. Trauma-focused therapy works. It works pretty well. It works. I would say probably the studies aren't out yet, but I would say it works better than medication, and it's one of the most effective forms of therapy that we have. Probably because PTSD is such a profound and can be such an incapacitating illness. The challenge. So I always encourage anyone suffering from PTSD to seek out and to do trauma-focused therapy. But I think we also need to have a variety of approaches because, for one reason or another, not everybody's ready to do this, or not everybody's willing to do this.
Yep.
So we wanted to have an alternative track, so to speak, which was not trauma-focused, and that's the important thing. Mm-hmm. What I mean by trauma-focused is really confronting and what therapists call processing, the complex and sometimes almost overwhelming feelings associated with the trauma that you went through.
I wish we had a lot more time to talk about this because I think, number one, it's very interesting, but secondly, because the problem is just so pervasive. And I know that even among veterans of my era, Vietnam, there's a lot of it that has just been virtually untreated for years and years and years and has caused significant problems. If people would like to know more about the research that you've done or mindfulness-based therapy for veterans and PTSD, is there a website? Is there some place that you can recommend that they go?
What I would recommend is there's a great website by the federal government. It's called clinicaltrials.gov. So clinical and then the word trials, T-R-I-A-L-S, .gov. I should have it written down, sorry. And if you go there, and if you plug in whatever search terms you want, like if you put PTSD in meditation, PTSD yoga, PTSD mindfulness, you'll get there's actually quite a bit of research going on, and if people are interested in a research trial, that's a great way to access those.
Great.
In general, however, I'd also recommend websites called the Center for Mindfulness.
Yes, John Kabat-Zinn's.
John Kabat-Zinn.
You bet.
And then also something called mind-body medicine. For people who are around, who are in Minnesota, also I'd like to people know that the Minneapolis VA actually has been running MBSR groups for 12 or 13 years, actually. And they also now have a research program specifically offering this to veterans of PTSD.
Great. We have been visiting with Dr. Anthony King, who is a research assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Michigan. Dr. King, thank you so much for taking time to be with us this evening. It's really interesting, and continued success with the work that you're doing.